So for those of you taking part in our crowdsourcing or group journalism project, Are You Being Gouged? Aren't you glad we didn't include hamburger meat in our shopping basket? We almost did because it's such a common item. But the question today is not, are you being gouged? It's, are you being poisoned by bacteria in what it now appears may be a full year's worth of bad meat processed and shipped from a Tops Meat Company plant right here in Elizabeth, New Jersey? So what's a carnivore to do? We will explain the latest on the recall and talk about some of the underlying problems and possible technological fixes now with Chris Waldrop, director of the Food Policy Institute at the Consumer Federation of America. Chris, thanks a lot for coming on WNYC. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
First of all, what's the status of the recall as you understand it?
The status right now is that they're recalling 21.7 million pounds of ground beef. That's, the second largest recall we've ever had here in the U.S.
That's a lot of burgers.
It's a lot of burgers. It's over eight states at least right now, and 27 people are sick. Nobody's died so far yet, which is a good thing, but this is still a huge, huge issue.
This expanded on Saturday to include a year's worth of meat from Tops. That's why the number that you just cited is so big. How could it be a year's worth? Wouldn't they have known long before now that the meat was tainted?
Well, I think what has happened, from my understanding, is that New York State was starting to see a cluster of illnesses, and they determined they were E. coli, and they were able, one lady or woman happened to have some leftover meat still in her freezer, and they were able to, you know, get that meat tested, find the correct strain of E. coli, and then trace it back to this Tops recall. So it is possible that people have gotten sick a year ago, but it just, nobody really knew about it. The other issue is that a lot of this is frozen meat, so it, you know, could have been frozen and stored for a long period of time before people started to actually buy it and use it.
And listeners, if you have questions about this Tops meat recall, you can call in with them now for Chris Waldrop from the Consumer Reports people, really, the Consumer Federation of America, director of their Food Policy Institute, consumerfed.org, 212-433-WNYC. Give us a call, 212-433-9692, or you can post a question to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show if you have any doubts about this. And we'll talk about some of the underlying reasons in a minute and what perhaps should change. But still on the details, how many different stores or chains carry this brand of meat? Is it easy to identify whether this is recalled meat or other meat?
Well, if you go on the USDA's website, they have a listing and pictures of all the different brand names and package design. So you could go in there, you could see it, and determine whether or not, you know, you had that particular meat in your freezer. I'm not exactly sure of the number of retail chains. The USDA doesn't give out that information because it's considered proprietary. So it's often difficult for consumers to know the exact chain until you start hearing reports in the media from people that have gone out and found it. I think Walmart was one of the stores that I've seen listed in the news reports.
The USDA inspectors found, according to USA Today, that the plant in Elizabeth lacked appropriate controls regarding beef carried over from one day's production to the next. And I don't know what that means. Controls carried over from one day's production to the next. That's one of the reasons that they recalled now this full year's worth of beef. Do you understand that phrase?
Right. Well, what that means is that they will, you know, this is an operation that grinds large pieces of meat into hamburger, and they will do a whole lot of grinding on a particular day. Typically, they'll then process that, put it in the patties, and ship it out. But sometimes they will keep these huge vats of ground beef and store it, and then use that with the next day's ground beef, and so they mix it all together. The problem is, if you don't handle that first day's beef very, very carefully, you run the risk of contaminating the whole lot. So you not only have, if there's E. coli in the first day's batch, you not only have that batch contaminated, but when you mix it with the next day's batch, you're now contaminating even more. And that, I think, was part of the problem here. The other issue is that USDA does not prohibit this this practice, even though it requires very careful controls. And since USDA doesn't prohibit it, companies can continue to do it.
So the first comment on our webpage is from somebody who sarcastically says, "This concern about bacteria is the reason that I only eat frozen, chopped-up cows that have been pumped up with antibiotics and chlorine," which leads us to our first caller, Gene in Manhattan. Gene, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gene.
Oh, hi, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you.
I've been buying organic ground hamburger from Whole Foods, and I put it in the freezer. I make my own patties and put it in the freezer. I wondered, is there a difference between organic, the way that's handled, that one wouldn't need to be concerned about E. coli?
Chris Waltrip, do you know?
Well, there haven't been any studies that have shown a difference, really, between risk of pathogen contamination between regular ground beef and organic ground beef. Organic is certainly... The cows are raised differently, and there's a lot of limits on what they can do there, but in terms of the processing of that meat, there haven't really been any studies to show a difference. So you just need to make sure that when you do have your hamburger, you're careful with it, you don't cross-contaminate when you're in your kitchen, and that you cook it to the appropriate temperature.
Because, you know, some people say a downside of organic produce is that it's more susceptible to various pathogens because they don't use pesticides on it. Is that your understanding? Is that a myth or is that a fact? And does it pertain at all to beef?
Well, the pesticides won't kill the pathogenic bacteria that we're talking about here with the salmonella or the E. coli.
In meat?
In meat or in produce.
Uh-huh.
The organic, there's still a process that has to go through, whether it's organic or regular food, cleaning it and packaging it and shipping it. And at any stage in that, if you're not carefully monitoring your processes, you could, contamination could occur. So it really is dependent on the companies and then an agency to oversee what the companies are doing to make sure that their controls in their processing environments and their farming environments are adequate to ensure that contamination doesn't occur.
Max in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Max.
Good day, everybody. My question is, food that is contaminated, can it affect different people in different ways? And what are some symptoms of E. coli poisoning?
Why, Max? What are you feeling right now?
Well, I had a hamburger yesterday, and I feel a little weak, but I feel fine. My stomach's fine, and I'm just curious.
Yeah. Okay. What about it, Chris?
Well, in terms of the symptoms, a lot of the symptoms are nausea, vomiting, fever. Sometimes with some organisms, it kind of feels like you have the flu, and so you have similar symptoms like that. In terms of his first question about does it affect people in different ways, there certainly are more susceptible populations. So if you look at infants and children, pregnant women, the elderly, and people with weakened immune systems who have, maybe other diseases that have weakened their immune systems, those people are certainly more susceptible and have to be much more careful when it comes to E. coli or any pathogen bacteria. But it can affect, it's not to say it can't affect everybody, it can affect anybody at any time, depending on a variety of circumstances. But some populations are more susceptible than others.
Isn't it amazing how the mind works? He's hearing this story, and he says, well, he ate some hamburger yesterday, and yeah, he's feeling a little weak now, but that weakness in and of itself wouldn't be an indication of E. coli.
No, not in and of itself, and it's certainly when you start thinking about this, you start to think about what you just ate the past day before.
Suddenly, I'm feeling a little queasy. I don't know why. Marie and Chelsea are on WNYC. Hi, Marie.
Hi. Well, listen, I'm 83, and I feel a little weak, but my question is...
But this has been going on for some time now, right? Yeah, okay.
Right, absolutely. I bought some ground lamb in Whole Foods. Is lamb also part of this worry about E. coli?
Lamb is not part of this particular recall, so it's not included in what's going on right now, E. coli is a naturally occurring bacteria. It occurs in the guts of cattle and sheep and other animals. So it certainly is something that we need to be aware of and that processors need to be aware of and that consumers need to be aware of when they're cooking it. So if they cook the meat thoroughly, they they really shouldn't have a problem, but it definitely, you can't say lamb is immune to this.
Someone else posts, mixing yesterday's batch with today's batch is something one would not, certainly should not do in one's own kitchen. And someone else asks, how long can meat be frozen?
Meat can be frozen almost indefinitely. It starts to lose some quality, a little bit of quality after a period of time, but you could still use it. It obviously could get freezer burn if it was in there for 5 years, but it can be frozen for a long period of time. In the refrigerator is another story. That should only be a few days.
Miguel in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Miguel.
Hi, Brian. Guys, now the question for me is, I know each company has established safety guards through the FDA standards. Now, so once they go through the safety guards, now that E. coli is maybe around, maybe not, does that mean that regardless of how strong the safety guards are, there's still a percentage of the, illnesses that will go out? Or, are the safety guards 100% accurate?
Well, that's a good question. Is this an incident or is this a trend, Chris? And does it represent a lack of adequate safeguards imposed by the government?
Well, I would say in this case, it was certainly a lack of adequate safeguards that were being employed by the company. But also, we think that there are a number of safeguards that the USDA should have and then does not have. A few examples of those are mandatory recall authority. This recall that happened is a voluntary one that USDA had to negotiate with the company. The USDA does not have the ability to require a recall, no matter what the situation is. Another issue is the ability to set performance standards for reducing pathogens in the food supply, and that means that you'd say that this is the lowest level of E. coli or salmonella that should be in the food supply, and it should be the lowest possible level achievable by today's technology. But then once most companies can meet that standard, then you bring it down, and in an effort to keep driving down any possibility of pathogenic contamination.
We have a few minutes left with Chris Waldrop, director of the Food Policy Institute at the Consumer Federation of America. We have linked to their website on our page. We've also linked right to the topsmeat.com website, so you can find out exactly what they're saying about the recall and how to identify this beef in your home if you're not sure. This is about E. coli, a strain known as 01, or I guess it's letter O, 157. H7, you needed to know that for sure. And there is a number on some of this meat, the establishment number 9748 on many of these packages. Chris, on the FDA and the safeguards, apparently the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, is going to come up with some kind of new standards or recommendations that they're going to release next month. I don't know if they were going to do that anyway or if that's particularly in response to this. But how much can technology reduce this risk?
Well, technology is certainly an important part of trying to reduce the risk of pathogenic contamination. And most of the plants out there, I would say probably all of the plants out there, are employing various technologies to make sure that the food they're producing is safe. So it's an important aspect of this, of addressing the problem, but it shouldn't be, it's not the end-all, be-all, silver bullet fix to address it. You also need to have government oversight, and you need to have inspectors in the plants looking at what the plants are doing and making sure that they're following all the regulations they're supposed to follow. So it requires a number of different measures to address the problem.
Inadequate funding with FDA inspectors down in recent years, from what I understand?
The funding is a huge issue, particularly on the FDA side, who's responsible for fruits and vegetables and seafood and really 80% of our food supply. They're responsible for overseeing that and ensuring its safety. And FDA funding has been significantly cut over the past 5 to 7 years, where they have lost inspectors, they haven't been able to hire new ones, they don't have the resources to really act on a proactive basis to protect consumers and ensure the safety of the products they're in charge of, they end up having to react. And we saw that in terms of the spinach outbreak last year, the salmonella outbreak that occurred in peanut butter last year. FDA was only able to really react to that and kind of follow it up after it had already happened. And that's a problem because that means people have already gotten sick.
Well, the bad pun of the day, the probably unintended bad pun of the day, goes to Congresswoman Diana DeJette, a Democrat from Colorado who is vice chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee. She said, "We need to beef up every area of food safety."
It is a bad pun, but it's 100% accurate. We do need to improve our food safety system. There's a lot of cracks in it that are now really starting to show, and we need to make sure that our food safety system is as strong as it can be.
Have you ever noticed that members of Congress say things like that all the time without even realizing it?
Oh, they love it.
Before you go, this meat factory is in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Where does that meat originate? Where did those cows live and die? Do you have any idea?
Well, they could have lived and died all over the country.
And maybe out of the country?
Possibly out of the country as well. Canada, Mexico, other countries like that. It's possible. We are also advocating for country of origin labeling, which would tell people where the meat actually came from. That's something that hopefully will be in place next year. But right now, because we don't have that, we don't really know. But just the nature of the industry, I assume that the meat has come from all over the country and possibly outside of it.
Which raises mad cow fears and all that other stuff that are not really relevant necessarily to this story directly, or at least that you shouldn't have to worry about right now. But check that meat in your freezer. If you want more information, we have the Consumer Federation website linked to on our page, also the Tops Meat website with details of their recall. Chris Waldrop is director of the Food Policy Institute at the Consumer Federation of America. Chris, thanks a lot for coming on with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up in a minute. Down and out in Paris and London. Maybe George Orwell was, but not Michael Bloomberg. We'll see how his dollars are trading for euros over there. Stay with us.